Just to recap what we're going to do, we're just going to go through this spreadsheet real quickly here with Mr. Jensen, and then we'll have amendments and a vote on Thursday. And we have the room reserved in 318 after committee if it goes longer from 4:30 to 6, if possible. But hopefully it's not necessary. We don't know. I'm looking at Senator Dibble. So with that, I think we'll just turn it over to Mr. Jensen.
Madam Chair, members, you have a spreadsheet in front of you. I'll just kind of outline that it's laid out on the left-hand side, the agency and the initiative for the Departments of Commerce is there, and then we have the base funding for the coming biennium, fiscal year 12 and 13. Then you see the governor's recommendations for fiscal years 12 and 13, and then the Senate recommendations. On the right-hand side, it shows a difference between the Senate and the governor's recommendations. So we start on line 7. It's the easiest way to follow through the spreadsheet. We have the Office of Energy Security within Commerce, and that's a general fund appropriation. As you can see, that's their base funding, and it's the same for the governor and the Senate. Line 8, the agency was in and asked for additional funding for the regulatory decision-making process, $265,000 increase each year. From the governor's recommendation and the Senate proposal is to accept that. So there would be an increase in their appropriation of $530,000. The other items, special revenue and federal, they are statutorily appropriated, but they're shown there for information. And these numbers come from the biennial budget. Line 12 is there for the federal stimulus money. As you can see, it's decreasing rapidly in the next biennium. So the total is on line 13. And then the other funds are shown as expected fund expenditures in the next biennium. Line 20 is for the telecommunications. That's a general fund appropriation. Their base is $2,020,000, and the governor and the Senate have the same recommendations. Line 22 is for the Minnesota Commission for Deaf and Hard of Hearing. That's from the Telecommunications Access Minnesota Fund. They have a base of $600,000 for the biennium, and the governor and the Senate have the same recommendation. Line 24, again, gives the totals for all of the commerce part of the budget. Line 30 is the revenues. Line 31 is basically the revenues from the base budget that are deposited into the general fund. Line 32 is an increase in the revenues coming from the increase in the appropriation from line 8, so it's the same amount. So they are required to recover all of their general fund appropriations.
And Mr. Jensen, briefly, this for the line 32 is an assessment that the OAS can assess. So that's where this appropriation, they have assessment authority.
Okay. Right, Mr. Madam Chair, on the next page is the same layout, but it's for the Public Utilities Commission. Line 37 is their base appropriation, and it's the same as the governor and the Senate. Line 38 is where they're requesting the additional money for expediting the decision-making process on regulations. The governor has $1.5 million, and the Senate has the same recommendation. And then we have some statutory appropriations, a little bit of the federal stimulus money on line 41. Line 48 is some revenues. You can see line 49 is their basic recovery of their base budget, and line 50 is the recovery of their new appropriation that they're requesting. Line 51 is a transfer from the telephone assistance program. We had a letter from the PUC that explaining they could help out the general fund by $1 million for the next biennium without reducing their activities or expenditures. The other items starting on line 52 is a transfer from the Telephone Assistance of Minnesota. We've gone through these and we can have found balances in the in this fund of $1.1 million that looks like could be transferred at the end of fiscal year 2013 without hurting any of their program activities. Line 53 through 59 is balances that have been found in the Renewable Development Fund. And we're proposing to cancel those balances and put them in the general fund to improve the general fund. As you can see, there's one very small one, $7,000, and then $280,000, $368,000, $59,000, and $22,000, and $600,000. Again, those are all from the Renewable Development Fund. And they show on the right-hand side because the governor had not proposed those transfers or cancellations. So you can see there's $3.8 million increase or impact on the general fund that the governor was not proposing. And on line 66 is the total revenues for the PUC. Line 68, we have what we call direct appropriations that show in the actual bill itself for commerce, TAM, PUC, and then the totals. Madam Chair, in the bill itself, we have further explanations of all those transfers, and I don't want to read them all, but I could, I guess. I'm just want to look at those and see if there's any questions.
Mr. Jensen, I did have a chance to sit down with most everybody here, except Senator Kubley, I think, was unable to come, and Senator Benson was off having a baby, I believe, or something. Very fun. So we did cover a lot of that, of course. We can certainly go through any questions that the members have about this. I would like to say that the RDF funds that we are taking have not, they have been basically, they're not used. They're unencumbered. So this green economy projects, Senator Kubley, well, let's start at the beginning, actually. The greenhouse gas advisory, that is something that has, it was only $7,000, but that was not used out of an original appropriation of $500,000 in 08. And then the hydrogen roadmap project for $280,000, that was, those projects have really become obsolete. In 05, they had 50 ideas, and now they're and 25 projects going. In 07, they had 24 ideas and 18 projects. And then just 2 years ago, they had 7 ideas and 2 projects. So we were able to just take the $280,000. I think that's something that's the interest in hydrogen as a primary fuel source is slowly waning quite a bit. The renewable grants is something we had a little problem of finding out exactly what this money was used for. The original appropriation was $2 million in 07, and there's $368,000 left, and couldn't quite nail down what those were for. So I was telling the other members I wish we had had that money to appropriate in the next gen or something where we knew exactly where those funds were being used on, what projects, and where they're at to date. So I've had a little problem with that one. The green economy project of $59,000, that is, The grant was for a green economy report, a statewide action plan from the Green Jobs Task Force. And it was issued, the report was issued in 2009, and the task force expired at June 30th of 2009. So we're taking the remaining $59,000. And then the $22,000 for the automotive technology projects was for the St. Paul Ford plant. And that is unobligated out of the $2 million that was appropriated in 2007 and 2008. And then the IRE grant solar rating certification lab, that's the biggest amount for $600,000. That is something that, with talking with U of M, there is, back in 2009, the legislature appropriated U of M some money to do solar rating and certification. But the Office of Energy Security states that because of the reduction in the national backlog in solar certification, there is a subsequent drop in testing demand. So the U of M is not moving forward with their laboratory plans, and that's why we can take the $600,000 because they have no plans to use this money whatsoever in that arena. Is there any questions from the members? There's Cheshire Cat over here. I'm not sure. We do have a quorum for the record. It's a good bill. We've met our target. We will roll this into finance on Friday, and then they will combine that with the environment and commerce bill. But we did have, coming out of this committee, reductions that we had to make. And so we were very good. I'd like to thank the PUC for looking into that special revenue fund, the TAP fund, when we questioned them about how many landlines there were and how big does this fund have to be. They said, go ahead and take, it was at 1.1 or 1 million. And so we were able to use that. But otherwise, I think it's appropriate that we fund the PUC and the OES and to what they need for their rate making. And I do have a couple questions for the Director Grant, if you wouldn't mind coming up, please. Welcome, Bill Grant. How are you?
Thank you.
Nice to see you. My question to you is, OES, can you just explain a little bit about your, number one, what the money is going to be used for, the $530,000 for the biennium, and how you see the roles of OES, where you've been and where you plan on going with this? I mean, that's $500,000, mm-hmm. would like to know.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Grant, Director of the Office of Energy Security in the Department of Commerce. The change level request that we submitted and that was included in the governor's proposal would fund three positions in our regulatory unit, two financial analysts, one rates analyst. This would not bring us back to where we were staffing-wise as late as 2005. And
you have that chart. Okay.
Do you have the chart that shows the okay. Roughly we had 22 full-time analysts and two supervisors and one manager in that unit. Were at this point at 17 full-time analysts and one manager, no supervisors. So we're down considerably, and over that same time period, we've seen a dramatic increase in the most work-intensive cases, those being rate cases that utilities bring to us, whereas at that time I think we were dealing with something like three active cases. We now have something like 15 active cases in front of the agency. Of course, we are the ones that review those cases before they go to the Public Utilities Commission for final approval. So, so that is, in a nutshell, the reason that we made the request. We're experiencing workload levels that are just not sustainable given the amount of additional work that's coming in front of us.
So, Mr. Grant, losing the five FTEs, is that that attrition, was it due to retirements? Was it due to dollar amounts? What was it due to?
Yeah, a variety of causes, Madam Chair. There was some attrition, but we've tried over the years to, of course, meet our workload with available staff without adding new staff, even when we had attrition. We're finding that that's not an approach that's going to work given the ongoing workload issues that we have.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Grant, you say reviewing the rate cases, where do you see OES, your office, go? What is the correlation between the PUC and where do you see that changing? Is that, do you think it's running smoothly? Is it duplicative? Do we need to sit back and say, okay, these are two separate, or are we doing the same thing over and over again? Yeah.
Madam Chair, and I'm going to ask Kate O'Connell to embellish my remarks, but in essence, our staff are the ones that do the very technical review of utility rate filings when they come before us. We're the ones who have the forensic accountants, for example, who can really dig deeply into issues like ongoing pension accounts or pension costs, executive salaries, all of the issues that come before the commission once they have it in front of them for a decision. And the commission relies on our analysis of those issues in building a record in those cases. And so that is work that's not being duplicated by commission staff. Once it's on their side, they're providing an analysis and summary for commissioners before they take action, but they're relying to a large extent on our analysis of those issues in order to build that record and provide that.
Mr. Grant, how did it work before the Office of Energy Security was in place?
Well,
is it always done in Department of Commerce and then sent over to the PUC, or was it done at the PUC?
Madam Chair, I mean, as at least in our agency and the predecessors to our agencies, formerly the Department of Public Service, provided a very similar relationship. And I believe it was in the mid-1980s when the split occurred, and it was as a result of a scandal, frankly, involving a utility executive, not involving me, Madam Chair.
That's nice to know. Thank you.
Involving a utility executive and the commission, and it was decided at that time that a separation between those functions and actually physically dividing them into two agencies was the appropriate step. Mm-hmm.
And in your opinion, or Ms. O'Connell, do you feel like this is running smoothly, this relationship that you have, delegation of duties between you and the PUC, is this running correctly? I mean, this is quite a bit of money. We hope we're getting the best for, because obviously you know it's probably not in the House language, so I need to know if I'm going to get the best bang for the buck.
I know, aware and appreciative of that, Madam Chair, and I'll let Ms. O'Connell address that.
Thank you,
Ms. O'Connell.
Thank you, Chairwoman and Senators. We do very much appreciate the support, and I want you to know that it is not going to be duplicated. And there are actually two, I would divide what we do into two overall functions. One's retail and one's wholesale. With the retail issues, that's most of the rate cases and all of the work that we do to try to keep rates that utilities charge reasonable. And that was exactly what Director Grant was talking about, that my group does all of the digging, the forensic accounting and all that. Commission staff then has to take not only our comments but the comments of all the parties, make sense of that, summarize it, compare and contrast, brief the commissioners, and as you can imagine, the issues get so detailed, commissioners need to be able to sort it through and ask questions a number of times, and it wouldn't be appropriate for them to ask us those questions if we're the people who are making recommendations. It works much better to have it separately this way because we really can be independent. we can develop our own testimony rather than, you know, perhaps having a commissioner stop by and ask for something, or we just know the commissioner has said something and we think, oh, you know, this would be a good thing to do. We really are independent, and I think it's a model that works very well in Minnesota. I think it, you know, we have to be accountable to the commission, but we're independent sufficiently that there isn't any kind of undue bias. The other part that we do work more closely, I would say hand in hand with the commission, is on the federal issues. I think you've heard about MISO, the Midwest Independent System Operator. Since 2005, the work that we've had to do with that has just exploded. We have so many groups that we're working on, and we're talking about millions and billions of dollars over time that will affect Minnesota. So we want to make sure that we're there to represent Minnesota's interests, and that's where we work hand in hand with the commission. We can't possibly have one set of staff that will cover everything. So we divide that with the commission. The commission takes care of some of the issues. We take care of some of the issues, and it depends on our deadlines. And the staff that the commission has been able to add to their group, who are engineers and so forth, have really been a blessing for us. We've been able to look at the MISO issues in more detail. And we have our accountants and our forecasting and our folks who are looking at issues. They've got their engineers, and we really do work together. So we want to be efficient. We certainly don't want to have time on our hands, and we don't have to worry about that happening anytime soon. I mean, this is an exciting time. Minnesota is expanding, and the nation is expanding, adding resources, whatever those resources are going to be. As we use electricity, we need to have the resources there to make it happen, and we'd like for that to be reasonably priced. And that takes some money to do that, but the payback for the work that my staff does is very, very high. It's not like we're trying to come up with a number, but what we're seeing is that when we do just our regular analysis, we find millions of dollars in rate cases and in other proceedings. So, and we know the utilities want to provide reasonable service, so we you know, bring out the best in them, I think, but we also, within the utility, we give the folks who are dealing with the regulatory process a basis to say, look, I can't make an unreasonable proposal with the commission because we're going to get slammed if we're in front of the commission making some proposal that isn't going to make sense. So I really think the whole process, the whole regulatory process, works very well.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. O'Connell or Director Grant? Committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions on this? Senator Cope, we saved some money. Well, with that, it's been a very short meeting, but if you do have any questions, feel free to swing by, and we will see you on Thursday, 3 o'clock here, and if it goes any longer, we'll meet in room 318, 4:30. So with that, everybody's ready? Meeting adjourned. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator.
We're taking testimony Thursday?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Absolutely. And amendments. Okay. With that, meeting adjourned.